You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers as always. My name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the Westside Community News, and today is a free agency extravaganza day, sort of. Not talking about DeAndre Ayton. That was two episodes ago. Got everything there. Yesterday, we talked about how the Pacers can get max cap space to pursue DeAndre Ayton. Today, we'll talk about everything else the Pacers could do this offseason. And to be fair, there's any player still out there they could sign. But I'm talking about stuff that they'll probably have to do, or at least consider doing the rest of this offseason. They have two draft picks they picked that are still unsigned. They have a couple guys with non-guaranteed contracts. They have some contract extensions to consider. They haven't signed any two-way deals yet. They have rookie scale options out there. I could go on and on. The Pacers have a lot to still do this summer, internally, externally, procedurally, whatever words you want to use. And we'll break it all down today in the non-external free agent division of what can the Pacers still do this summer. We'll cut through it all today. So we'll start with the additions section, the procedural section, I guess I'll call that contract slash guarantees to be more accurate, and the extensions section. So the additions section is the Pacers adding a player, but I'm not talking like someone who's not on their team right now, although that could be the case. They could still use more forwards, for example. Like, they currently only have, of guys who truly consider forwards, O'Shea Brissett, Terry Taylor, and Kendall Brown. Jalen Smith's going to start at the four. He could be a five. Duarte's a wing guard hybrid. Same with Nesmith. You know, they could always use more forwards. But I'm not here to just say they should sign a forward. I'm here to talk about what the Pacers, free agency-wise, will need to do as they continue forward in this offseason. And I think the number one thing when you look at what the Pacers are going to have to do signing-wise is sign their second-round draft picks. They still have not done that. Andrew Nembhard, they picked. They have his draft rights. He cannot sign anywhere else. Same with Kendall Brown. They cannot sign anywhere else. They can sign the tender, which is a one-year minimum deal. But they have to do that with the Pacers, at least for their first season. They're going to be with the Pacers. That is not up for debate. But what they haven't done is actually put pen to paper on a deal yet. And I think that's interesting, both in terms of the timing, what it signals about the rest of the Pacers summer, and the fact that it hasn't happened yet, how the Pacers are going to do it. So let's talk about Andrew Nembhard first, the 31st overall pick. And that one's interesting to me because that's the first pick outside the second round. That guy usually gets a good chunk of change. You know, Jalen Williams, I think he went 32nd. I should really have pulled this up beforehand. From OKC, got almost $8 million, maybe over $8 million from the Thunder on a four-year deal. With the, you know, there's some non-guaranteed stuff on the back end of that. But they give him a lot of money because that's basically a first-round pick level player. So Andrew Nembhard is going to get some cash, and that's important for the rest of the Pacers offseason because there's been a lot of discussion, including from me, about clearing exactly enough max cap space to sign DeAndre Ayton or whatever player you want to sign. Doesn't matter. Okay, then what? You still have to sign Andrew Nembhard to a contract at some point. They can't, you know, having him on a one-year tender deal would be a disaster if they picked him 31st. So looking back at last year's 31st pick, Isaiah Todd to the Wizards. Remember, the Pacers actually traded them that pick in the Isaiah Jackson trade. Isaiah Todd with the Wizards signed a four-year, $6.9 million contract. The first 3 years of that were fully guaranteed. He was guaranteed at signing, it looks like, $4.9 million. And then the last year of that contract is a team option. So Nembhard should probably expect, or could probably negotiate to try to get something similar to that. And if you're the Pacers, you would like him to have at least a three-year deal so he can be a restricted free agent with full bird rights at the end of that. That's why a lot of these guys in picks, let's say 31 through 40, get these 3 to 4 year deals with some funky options on the back end. So the Pacers, I'm sure, would like to sign Andrew Nembhard to a four-year deal, somewhere between $6 and $7 million. In fact, I bet they've already negotiated a lot of the details with his camp. But they haven't signed him yet for roster spot reasons, most likely, and of course, salary cap reasons, keeping space open for a big move they might want to make. But even after they make a big move, let's say they sign Ayton, they still need space to sign him to a three-year deal. If they sign him to a minimum contract, they can give him a two-year deal only on a minimum deal, right? If they use the room exception to sign him, they could give him a lot more money in the first year, but they still could only limit him at a two-year deal. If they want to sign him to a three-year deal or four, which is customary for some of these really early second-round picks, the Pacers need space or an exception. And if they use an exception, they would be over the cap. Anyway, they need a way to sign Andrew Nembhard, and they need to sign Andrew Nembhard at some point. They will probably wait until the dust settles on anything else they might want to do, whether that's take in salary from another team, sign someone like Ayton, bring in something else. I don't know what all is on the table, just going off of what's reported. But once that's settled, Andrew Nembhard will be the center of their attention. That's something the Pacers have not done yet this summer. On my salary cap sheet that I use for my own estimates, I penciled in a four-year, a little shy of $6.8 million deal that Isaiah Todd got, starting at about $1.5 million and scaling up by, I think I have it at like the 5% raises every year until the end, with a team option on the end. He could get more than that. That's just an estimate I've been using. And either way, the Pacers will probably need somewhere between $1.5 to $2 million in space or left of an exception to sign him to that deal. So that's something the Pacers still have to figure out how to do this summer. If they clear exactly enough space for Ayton, they're still not done. They still have to find a way to get Nembhard on this team, because I don't think signing him to a minimum is a good thing. You know, the Lakers just signed Max Christie to a fully guaranteed two-year minimum deal. At the end of that, they'll only have his early bird, right? So they'll be limited by something called the Arenas provision, which isn't worth talking about now because Nembhard hasn't signed. But they also only could have him for 2 years potentially before he goes into restricted free agency. You don't want that if you're a team. If you draft a guy in the top 38 to 40, you would like to have them for as long as possible. That's close to a first-round pick. And I think the Pacers need to think about that as one of their other moves to make in free agency. And Kendall Brown is interesting. You know, 48th pick. The history there is a little all over the place. Some guys get a guaranteed year in there. Some guys get a two-way. The last two 48th picks have gotten a two-way contract, including Sharif Cooper last year with Atlanta. It's possible the Pacers have him on a two-way. You know, they have 16 guys that I've said that are kind of in their roster orbit right now that makes sense to be on the Pacers roster. If that's the case, the easiest way to get that to 15 is just signing Kendall Brown to a two-way deal. But they could do that now. Nothing is stopping them from doing that right now. They don't have any. That would not change their salary cap outlook. That would not really change a roster imbalance. The fact that they haven't yet is telling to me that they're considering at least giving him a deal that's a standard NBA deal of some kind entering this season, both for wing depth purposes, for player development purposes. He's young and fits their timeline. So he, by being picked 48th, much farther back in the draft, 17 picks farther back than Nembhard, could be a minimum guy. That would make sense to me to have him on a minimum deal. You don't need an exception for that. You don't need salary cap space to sign minimum contracts. They still would procedurally and roster size-wise like to wait still. They would like to do that, I'm sure. I am sort of guesstimating based on, you know, knowledge, that they would like to do that after they have the rest of the team settled in whatever way they can, whether that's just dumping someone they don't want or adding someone awesome, whatever. I think Kendall Brown, whether it's a two-way or a minimum, depending on how the rest of their offseason goes, will be one of the last things the Pacers do. But they still have to do it. They still have to sign him. He's not technically under contract. And this kind of thing, you know, always makes me uneasy as kind of a I hope players get their money kind of guy. Like EJ Liddell got picked by the Pelicans in the second round. He has not signed with them yet. He's playing in summer league, torn ACL, right? What's going to happen to him now? What's his contract status going to look like? That kind of stuff would make me queasy if I'm a player or agent. And that's why Dwayne Washington pushing his guarantee date back and still playing is great for the Pacers and very scary for him. And for these second round guys, it's a similar sort of risk thing. So that is two things on the free agency front the Pacers still have to do this offseason. Sign their second round guys. That's the context around those. I think Kendall Brown will be the very last official signing in terms of the order of transactions the Pacers do. And Nembhard will squeeze in somewhere between if they make, you know, a big splashy move or if they make a little cutting move to trim up their size or money. He will become after that to fit it in the best way possible. And in terms of other free agency additions, they could, in theory, if they're done signing people now and Kendall Brown gets a 2A, they could already have their 20. They have four rumored Exhibit 10 guys, plus 16 guys already kind of under with their rights or under contract now. That's 20. That's your training camp group. So maybe they don't need to sign anybody to a 2A, and they're already done. But then they have to figure out who they're converting of their Exhibit 10 guys, whether that's Eli Brooks, Jermaine Samuels, Fanbo Zhang, Tevin Brown. I already mentioned Kendall Brown would probably have to be a 2A if the 20 they have in their orbit now is correct. So that's possible. The three Celtics players cannot get a 2A. They have too much money guaranteed this season to be eligible for a 2A. So rule them out of that discussion. But the Pacers do have to sort that out. And maybe it's an external guy. I talked about David DeLeo potentially making some sense there. But if they want to do that, again, they'll have to move around some other contracts whether that's exhibit 10s or guaranteeds or whatever, to fit everybody into camp. You can only bring 20 players in on your training camp team. You can only have up to that many on your roster size at once. That's why a lot of these moves like Kendall Brown and Andrew Nembhard have not happened yet. The roster size is important. The space the Pacers have is important and must be used in the right order. So it's two-way contracts. I'll be very curious who they bring in. I'm guessing it's already two players that are, you know, the Pacers own their rights or have a reported deal done with them, and they just don't know who it's going to be at. And they're going to convert someone's deal or sneak in that one of those guys gets a two-way just before camp starts. You know, Dejan Giroux, it was announced his two-way. I think Scott Agnes was the first one to report that last summer. That was about 4 weeks into free agency before that one got settled. Dwayne Washington was right on draft night. Giroux was about 4 weeks later. So it could be a while before that's all settled. It could take till a lot of the rest of free agency and a lot of these other guys are in their locations. And, you know, in terms of the free agency moves the Pacers could still make this summer, obviously Ayton's show from 2 days ago and yesterday, but really any free agent, any trade is still possible in terms of additions. I'm not going to run through that they could do anything because they have, you know, about the most cap space in the league, them in San Antonio. I mean, they're kind of in the mix for anything that could benefit them, if it's a salary dump or a signing or whatever, so that there's still stuff they could do. But I think that in terms of just stuff that's within the Pacers' grasp or names that are, you know, connected to them via rights or via contract, there are still, between Nembhard and Brown and two-way deals, a lot of stuff the Pacers will still be doing this summer that's important to sort out and consider in the discussion of the moves they need to make this offseason. Speaking of moves they need to make this offseason, there's still some contract option stuff they have to consider. And I've talked about a couple of these already, but I still want to push the importance of them as the team is still not totally settled. So what options are still out there? Rookie scale options, team options that the Pacers still have to kind of get through, non-guaranteed stuff. Let's break that all down. Before we do that, though, I want to talk to you guys about Built Bar, who are making the best tasting protein bars ever. So many listeners have tried them and told me that they love them, and you should be the next. So what makes Built Bar so great? They're protein bars that are 100% covered in chocolate. So they're absolutely delicious. They taste like a candy bar, and they come in so many awesome flavors that there's something for everybody. I love the peanut butter brownie. I love the cookie dough. But they have dozens of flavors right there on their website, and they have a new one, coconut brownie chunk. They even have a puff variety with those flavors plus marshmallow. So they're super delicious. And what makes them a sales point beyond that they're really good is that they're good for you. Low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and all delicious, all made with collagen protein, so your body absorbs it more efficiently. Tons of health benefits. You can eat something good that tastes good and is good for you. That's super rare to find these days, but Built Bar has found the combination. Try it yourself. Go to built.com. Use the promo code LOCKED15 when you're checking out. You'll get 15% off your order. That promo code, again, is LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. Thank you, as always, for making Locked On Pacers your first listen today and every single day. For your second listen, let's try Locked On Nuggets. The big move in the NBA free agency-wise yesterday, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope contract extension, Adam Mares, and Matt Moore will have that for you over at Locked On Nuggets. They do an awesome job covering that team, and that's a great extension for Denver, getting KCP, their best defensive wing, in the Jokic era locked up. Speaking of locking up players, the Pacers have some options, some non-guarantees, whatever you want to call it, out there that they still have to settle this offseason. Many of these are no-brainers. Actually, almost all of them are no-brainers, except for one that I thought was a no-brainer that is slowly not. So in terms of contract options, what I've lumped into here is rookie scale options and the non-guaranteed contracts, which are effectively not options, but for the sake of this discussion, they are. I've already talked a lot about the non-guaranteed stuff, so I'll do that at the end and keep it shorter. I think the rookie scale options are the part that I haven't talked about yet, and the reason being, these decisions aren't due until October 31st. They are a far-off thing the Pacers have to decide, but it's still part of the stuff they still have to do this offseason, and that makes this show the fitting time to do it. What is a rookie scale option? So the way rookie scale contracts works, if you're drafted in the first round, you get a rookie scale contract. It's a four-year deal, where the last 2 years are a team option year, and it's decided a full year in advance. So using Benedict Mathurin as an example, even though he is not a guy we'll be discussing in this segment, after this first season for Mathurin, next summer, in the summer of 2023, the Pacers will have to decide on the third year option on Mathurin's deal before his second season. So before the 2023-24 season, the Pacers have to decide on his option for 2024-25. And then after his second season, they have to decide on his fourth year. So it's a full year in advance. So I explain that to say, Jalen Smith, who's no longer on a rookie scale deal, does not have any rookie scale options this summer. Goga Batadze is entering his fourth year, so he's done getting these options. He got both of his picked up. He's headed into year four, no problem. And then Mathurin, who's only entering year one, does not yet have an option needed to consider for his rookie scale deal. So the guys eligible, the guys still on rookie scale contracts who have years left and will have options to consider this offseason are Tyrese Haliburton, drafted in 2020, Chris Duarte, drafted in 2021, Isaiah Jackson, drafted in 2021, and Aaron Nesmith, drafted in 2020. So by October 31st, the Pacers will have to decide about these options. The first one, Tyrese Haliburton, his fourth year option for the 2023-24 season. Do the Pacers want to have him on the team for $5.8 million? Do I even need to talk about this? Yes, they will pick up that option, done. There's absolutely no considerations there. $5.8 million is a steal for Haliburton, but that is one of the decisions they have to make. The second one, Chris Duarte for the 2023-24 season. That will be his third year rookie scale option for $4.1 million. Again, obviously no-brainer. That will be picked up. He will be on the team for that amount. But let's talk about one that's not a no-brainer. I think it's the only one of these four guys that isn't a no-brainer, and that's Aaron Nesmith. Nesmith, like Haliburton, because they were drafted in 2020 and they have played two seasons now, their fourth year option is the one on the table now. Aaron Nesmith in the 2023-24 season, if his option is picked up, would be due $5.6 million. I think that it makes sense to pick it up. He's not embarrassingly bad. He plays on the wing. The Pacers having him for 2 years to see what he is and develop him and see how he fits in with a full offseason in their camp and with the team that they have. Yeah, that makes sense. And it's not, $5.8 million is not that much money for a guy who could be a good shooter. And they have into the season to decide, which I'll talk about in a second. The argument against it is, if they clear up that $5.8 million off the books, they would have more cap space next summer to potentially be aggressive in adding to their team either via salary dumps or signings or whatever they would be able to do with their space at that time. Cap space means less for the Pacers, but being able to do salary dumps, any team can do that. And perhaps that extra $5.8 million could help them. So the Pacers have to decide if they could get more value out of $5.8 million in cap space next summer, if they even have any. If they sign someone this summer, they might not. Or if they'd rather have Nesmith at that number. So to me, if they were good, they would have to think about this. You know, if you go back three summers now, wow, it's been a while. You know, TJ Leaf got his fourth year option picked up, and he was much worse than Aaron Nesmith was at the time his got picked up. But his got picked up because the Pacers were over the cap anyway. There was no benefit to declining it. They didn't get more cap space. They didn't need to. Now, the pandemic ended up making the cap not go up, and they ended up having to salary dump him, but it made sense to keep Leaf. Like, it is really rare for even semi-competent players to have their option years decline. The Pacers declined Solomon Hill's fourth-year option, if you'll recall, then he had that big playoffs and got a ton of money. And I bet the Pacers wish they did pick up the fourth-year option. And lessons learned, they haven't declined a rookie-scale option since that date. If I am in charge, I'm picking up this option, and I think 99% the Pacers would pick up this option. Why not? Nesmith was a lottery pick. He has some skills that look like NBA skills. You know, even if he's been rocky, yeah, you keep him around and see what he can grow with your team. There is very, very little argument against it. But it is, unlike the rest of these guys, you can at least hear it and present it and say what it is. But I think Aaron Nesmith's option at $5.8 million will be picked up for the 2023-24 season for his fourth year. That's not so expensive that you could never trade him away at that point anyway. And it's not a lot of opportunity cost unless they spend a ton of money the rest of this summer. I think it makes sense for them to pick it up, and I think that they will by the time it's all said and done. But another key factor here, and this is something that actually happened to Nick Stauskas, who is currently a Pacer, we'll talk about him in a moment, is the Pacers have until October 31st to actually pick up that option, which is a key part of this, right? They can decide in the season. The season will start in mid-October. They have till the end of October to decide if they would like to do this. I might have just said August. If I did, I meant to say October for all those months. They haven't talked Halloween, October 31st, to decide. So they can actually see him play with their team for a few weeks before they make that decision. And for Nick Stauskas, I think it was entering his second year, might have been his third year. I'll pull up his game log really quick. You know, Philly had to decide if they wanted to pick up his option year, and he had just been traded there. and he played one game before it. He scored 12 points. He gets his third-year option picked up. And then he has a rocky rest of the season and is out of the rotation for some games. So he enters year four, and they still haven't decided. Or excuse me, he enters year three. They still haven't decided on the fourth year. And this is when the league started in late October. So he had two games before Halloween that year. And then the first one, he went 5 for 6 for 13 points. And then the next one, he scored 6 points. And they picked it up and they kept him. And, like, those games really mattered. Those evaluations in those games really showed that, okay, maybe he is a little better. We'll pick up the fourth-year option. They ended up trading him in the next season, but they picked it up. So that matters in Stauskas' case that he was able to show what he could do and prove himself. For Nesmith, I still, again, 99% chance, I would say, they'll pick up his fourth-year option. Again, he was a former lottery pick, and he's been good enough. But the games between the start of the season and that date could, in theory, matter for him. If he plays really well, it's a no-brainer. If he plays poorly, maybe that chance goes down to like 80% or something. But again, that's not that much money. They just traded for him. I don't think they would decline it and shoot themselves in the foot in the situation that Jalen Smith was in, even though they didn't do that. Isaiah Jackson has a $2.7 million option for his third year. I mean, again, no discussion to be had. No-brainer, 2023-24, Isaiah Jackson, that will be his salary. Those are not the only options left or guarantees left for the Pacers this offseason. Two more remain. It is now the 14th for you, so this date is tomorrow. Tomorrow is the guarantee date for Nick Stauskas and Dwayne Washington's contracts. Dwayne Washington's old date was July 6th. He and the Pacers agreed to push it back to the 15th. I'm still curious why Dwayne Washington agreed to that. And I'm curious how that date was chosen. That's the last regular season summer league game for the Pacers. We'll see. I highly doubt Dwayne gets cut, but that seems like the biggest way the Pacers could have convinced him to do this is saying they would have cut him if he didn't agree. I have no idea. I still think he'll be on the roster this coming season, but that date did get pushed back, so it's worth monitoring. His summer league hasn't been exactly what he would have hoped or the Pacers would have hoped. So we'll see. Dwayne Washington's contract becomes guaranteed for $1.6 million, if not waived before or on Friday, which is tomorrow if you're listening the day this comes out. I, again, doubt he does get waived, but it is possible, I suppose. They wouldn't have pushed his date back for nothing. So we'll see what happens there. Maybe that date gets pushed back again, but I would be, you know, I didn't get it the first time, so I guess we'll see what happens in that saga. Nick Stauskas' contract also becomes fully guaranteed on Friday. Only $86,000 of it is not currently fully guaranteed, so I don't know what it really matters there. Maybe they just waive him on that day, or maybe they are finalizing details of something and that deadline will spur some action I don't know. But that date, the Pacers could have roughly 1.7 less of easily accessible space available to them depending on what they do. I don't think Nick Stauskas will be on their team next season, so I'd imagine he's either traded or cut by Friday. But we'll see. I don't know what the Pacers' plans for him are. I suppose that is just my assumption given his salary, given the way that trade was structured, and given the way the Pacers' rotation currently looks like it's going to shake out to be. But I don't know everything. Those are just the last two options to consider. Last thing I want to talk about on the stuff the Pacers could and will still have to consider this offseason is contract extensions. They have three extension-eligible players on the team right now. Let's talk about what their situation is, and I'll probably do a full podcast with a segment for each of these guys. But for now, let's just do a high-level overview of the potential contract extension debates for Buddy Hield, Miles Turner, and Goga Batadze. Thank you, as always, for making Locked On Pacers your first listen today and every single day. For your second listen, Locked On Kings with Matt George, Keegan Murray, kicking butt in Summer League, just did very well against Chet Holmgren. Matt will have all that for you over at Locked On Kings. So three players currently extension eligible for the Pacers this offseason by virtue of when they signed their deal originally. That's Buddy Hield, Miles Turner, and Goga Batadze. Buddy Hield signed his deal with the Kings two summers ago now. Yes, October 21st, 2019. So Hield is not technically eligible to sign a new extension until just before the season would start because of the timing in which he signed that deal with the Kings. But he's extension eligible this summer. Turner is, and Goga Batadze is. He is eligible for a rookie scale extension, which is a little different. So Hield can't sign it until the anniversary of his deal. It's basically right before the regular season starts is when the restriction would lift for him. Buddy Hield, his contract's declining the last year of it is next season. So the way these veteran extensions work is, in total, your deal cannot be longer than 5 years. So since Hield has two more years on his deal, The most you could add to it is 3. The most you can add to it money-wise is 120% of the final year of your contract with then 8% raises. I don't want to get too into the weeds, but for Buddy Hield, he in theory could sign a contract extension for either 1, 2, or 3 years, and the total value cannot exceed $72.2 million on that extension. Let me jump out ahead of this before you scratch your head. No, they should not sign him to a 3-year, $72 million extension. That is just the full maximum parameters that they can sign him to an extension within. I don't know that there's a good argument in favor of extending Buddy Hield, but I will, again, do a full podcast on contract extensions, maybe tomorrow, honestly. I mean, it seems like a good time to do it while the Pacers are not playing and free agency still rolls on. But Buddy Hield is eligible for that. Perhaps a different team would be more inclined to do that than the Pacers, but at the Pacers' current juncture where they're clearly trying to get younger, adding more years to a possibly overpaid player in Buddy Hield to his contract at that much money, or at even a lot of money, doesn't make a lot of sense. But he's not going to accept a, you know, an extension with a big pay decrease or anything like that. Even at age 29, it might make more sense for him to just get out in free agency as a 31-year-old and see what money he can get. So I don't think Buddy would take an extension, but the Pacers will have to consider maybe adding a year or two to that, like they did when Brogdon had just a couple years left on his deal last summer. Miles Turner is also extension eligible. If you go back about a week and a half, I talked about the merits of doing that for the Pacers because with him, they can do a renegotiation and extension, super rare. They could also do a veteran extension, and I don't think they would extend him until, again, a lot of this other stuff is settled. Not to be cryptic, but like the Ayton stuff matters in terms of if the Pacers would consider something like this. Either way, with a renegotiation and extension, Miles Turner using cap space could just get a bunch more money this current season and then have like a much smaller contract in future seasons. So in total, it gives him more money, but it gives the Pacers a much more tradable contract on the back end. But on a veteran extension front, Turner, with only 1 year left on his deal, could sign a 4-year extension worth up to $94 million. I should add for both Buddy and Miles Turner that I am mentioning only their base salaries. With bonuses, Buddy Hield's extension could be like 3 years, $80 million. And for Miles, with bonuses, it would be like 4 years, $102 million or something like that. So they are both eligible for veteran extensions. Again, with Turner, maybe he would take like a shorter extension at this stage, but he's never been an unrestricted free agent. All these centers are getting near his value this summer in free agency that he's a little bit better than and more valuable than. I don't think he would take that extension, even though the Pacers would be thrilled if they could lock up Miles Turner for a year or two more near the current amount he is getting paid. So I don't know what all the considerations of that would be or what Turner would consider in those sort of discussions, but he is eligible for an extension, and he will be throughout the entire upcoming season. Buddy Hield has 2 years left on his deal, so once the regular season starts, he is no longer extension eligible, but he is until then. His is weird because he signed his old contract under the old NBA calendar, but it wouldn't be able to happen until October. Whatever, it doesn't matter. Miles Turner, well, it does matter, but not for this podcast. Miles Turner, though, could sign his extension now and could throughout the entire upcoming season, even once the season starts. The last player extension eligible for the Pacers this summer, not a veteran extension, a rookie skill extension, is Goga Bitadze. He could sign an extension that would kick in the year following this one. Rookie skill extensions usually don't happen until much later in the offseason. The deadline for those is the day before the season. If you'll recall, you know, Sabonis, he got a rookie skill extension for his current contract, and there was all the hoopla of him, you know, after practice saying, oh, I know how they feel about me now, and we couldn't come to this deal. And then they came to one anyway, even after, you know, the public terrible quotes coming out from practice that day. I'll never forget that practice. But yeah, that is a different sort of extension that is available to rookies. And that can be 4 years up to the max. Theoretically, it could be 5 years if designated rookie extensions can be 5 years. Goga is not getting a designated rookie extension. I will tell you that right now. So in the most they could extend Goga for is 4 years up to the max. They will not extend him up to the max, obviously. With him, it's a little different because rookie extensions are tough because you're kind of guessing what the player will be worth the year after their fourth year, and rookies can actually grow into contracts, whereas veterans, it's a little harder. So if you're the team, you'd like to agree to a deal that you feel like will be below their market value. But if you're the rookie, you usually want to bet on yourself. That's why outside of the max ones, there's not that many of these every summer, or they take a lot of haggling with public statements and things like Sabonis's did. So Goga's would probably not be very expensive per year if they can even agree to one, and given how many centers the Pacers currently employ or could employ if they get this DeAndre Ayton fellow who they've been reportedly targeting, you know, it would not make a lot of sense to extend Goga unless he's willing to take well below his market value on a longer deal. So I'm not thinking there's a lot that makes sense there, but there could be, and I'll talk about it on a podcast later this offseason. He is, though, extension eligible up to a four-year deal and up to, you know, just going off cap estimates, my goodness, $152 million. Goga's not getting close to that money, but that is the full parameters that he could fit into. So that's the stuff that the Pacers still have to consider this offseason in the non-free agent external addition. Signing their second-round picks, Andrew Nembhard and Kendall Brown, figuring out their options and guarantees with rookie-scale guys, Dwayne Washington and Nick Stauskas, and figuring out if anyone is worthy of a contract extension a la Malcolm Brogdon last year, a la Domantas Sabonis a few years ago in the case of Goga Batadze. If you have any questions about this stuff or any thoughts about what the Pacers need to consider in all this that I did not mention, if you're watching on YouTube, comment down below. And if you're listening, talk to me on Twitter, at TEastNBA. I try to be very responsive with free agency and cap questions that seem not disingenuous. I'm sure there's a word for that that isn't just me saying a double negative. Thank you guys a ton for listening. Hope you enjoyed this show. Tomorrow, I think I'll talk contract extensions in lieu of news happening on Thursday that requires being discussed. And if something comes up, that will be, of course, be talked about. And maybe I'll do something on, you know, how the Pacers could get involved with the Jazz in this Donovan Mitchell stuff. Not directly trading for Mitchell necessarily, but just poaching up some pieces or making it a positive for them as well. Perhaps that's something we could talk about tomorrow. Let me know if you want to hear anything topics-wise, though, because they don't play again in Summer League until Friday night. And I'm always down to talk about what fans want to hear on the free agency front. So thank you guys a ton for listening. Hope you have a great day and week. We'll see you tomorrow.